So on Monday nights, we begin with our quick class in Navi, where our goal is to cover ground. We discussed last week that in order for one to attain prophecy, one must be on a very high level spiritually, one must have perfected oneself, one's midot. We discussed the Mishnah and Tractate of Avodah Zarah that discusses the evolvement of one's traits to the point where one can attain prophecy. We discussed that the prophet is validated by the courts. We discussed that the prophecies that were written were those that have an eternal message, and that in order to glean from that wisdom, one has to have a tradition, one has to learn with the traditional interpretations of the prophets. And so, without further ado, we will begin. The first of the prophets is the book of Joshua, Yoshua bin Nun, the son of a fish. On a different occasion, we'll have to discuss why he's called the son of a fish. Yoshua bin Nun is our leader after Moshe Rabbeinu passes away. The year is 2,488 years from creation. The Jews have spent 40 years in the desert, traveling the desert, and now it's time to enter the land of Israel. They spend that month of mourning after Moshe's passing. During that month of mourning, Yoshua sends two spies. Who are the two spies he sends into Israel? Kalev ben Yefunah and Pinchas ben Elazar. The two of them enter the land of Israel. And notice that this time we don't have 12, we have two. We don't have the whole nation involved. Only Joshua sends the two pious people, Pinchas, who is going to be the leader of the people of Israel after Yoshua's passing, and Kalev ben Yefuneh, who is a great sage and a great tzaddik. And so they enter the land of Israel and they come to the city that is known as the key to the land of Israel, otherwise known as Jericho, for the fantastic smell that would emanate from Jericho. The great palm trees would grow there and ships out at sea would smell from Jericho. From far away they would smell that they're approaching the land of Israel, and that's why it is called Jericho, for the smell. So they enter the city of Jericho, and Jericho is a city that has a wall around it that is so thick they actually have houses in the walls. And there is a woman in Jericho who is one of the most beautiful women that ever lived. Her name is Rahab. The Talmud says that if a man had once known her and then would just recall her name and say, Rahab, Rahab, he wouldn't be able to contain himself. He'd go wild. So that's how beautiful Rahab was. Every king all over the planet would come out just to be with Rahab. Now, Rahab the Zona, Rahab doesn't, she's a woman of ill repute, so that's a good place to hide out. They come to her, and they don't seem strange, because she has visitors from all over the world all the time. And she tells them, no one has strength anymore. I know my steady customers. None of them from Israel are coming anymore. They don't have strength to do anything anymore. Everyone's totally depressed. They're confident that you're going to destroy and win and conquer the land of Israel. And as they are by Rahab, the king's men come knocking on the door. She takes Kalev ben Yefuneh and hides him among the branches of flax that she has drying out on her roof. And the soldiers come in looking for the two. Pinchas, who is also Elio, can make himself invisible. And Kalev, Pinchas is also Elio, yes. And Kalev ben Yefuneh is hiding up there. And Rahab tells the soldiers, quick, quick. You know, if those men were spies, you could still catch them. They just left. They must have headed out back to the sea, to cross the Jordan, back to the river, to go back. Go catch them quick, you'll catch them. And being that she has such a good relationship with everyone, so they trust her, they run out. And she tells the people, look, I saved your lives, now you pay me back. Save my lives, my family's lives. So they tell her, fine, gather your father, mother, sister, brother, all the relatives you have, gather them into here, and when we come in, you leave this red string hanging out your window, this red rope, and then we'll know it's your house, and we will keep our promise, we'll keep you alive, provided that you only have them in the house. So Rahab tells them, don't head back, because you don't want to meet up with the king's men. Don't head back to the Jordan. Go in the opposite direction. Go out into the desert for 3 days and wait, and then travel back so that you're not caught en route. So the king's men run all the way to the Jordan, and they obviously they don't catch them. And Kalev and Pinchas climb out the window. They go out into the desert. They wait the 3 days, and then they head back, and they tell Yoshua, you have him. That's it. Everyone's scared. We're going to conquer them. It's not a problem. It's a piece of cake. As Rahab lets Kalev and Pinchas out the window, she turns her eyes to heaven, and she says, God, you know that through this window and up this rope, so many people would come, and I sinned with so many people, but now I want to do tshuva. Accept my tshuva. Let this be the fixing of all the improper things I did in the past. And Rachav is a tremendous malas tshuva. And when we enter the land of Israel, she gets wed, she becomes a giyores, and she gets married to Yoshua bin Nun. And together they have a bunch of daughters. He has no sons, only daughters. And Rachav does tshuva. They keep their promise to her, and she keeps her end of the deal. Now, Yoshua is told, tell the people to prepare, they're going to travel. From the day Moshe Rabbeinu died, we no longer had the well of Miriam, we no longer had the man, we no longer had the clouds, because the clouds were there in the merit of Aaron. The man was there in the merit of Moshe. The well was there in the merit of Miriam. When Aaron passed away, the clouds disappeared and came back in the merit of Moshe. When Miriam died, the water disappeared and came back in the merit of Moshe. So when Moshe died, all three disappeared. And that's why the prophet describes Moshe's passing as Vakhid et shloshet aroim biyom echad. I took away your three shepherds in one day, because it was as though we lost them all at once. Because Moshe could bring back everything, and when he passed away, we lost everything all at once. But Hashem made a miracle, and the man that they had in their vessels lasted them until they entered then the land of Israel and were able to harvest their own crops. What day of the year does Moshe pass away on? Seventh of Adar. It doesn't say it anywhere in the Torah, but we work our way backwards. We work our way backwards from the days of mourning, and then they enter the land of Israel. So we work our way backwards. We end up in the seventh of Adar. So now the spies come back to Yoshua, and Yoshua tells the nation to get ready. They're going to travel. We no longer have the pillar of cloud in front of us. We no longer have the pillar of fire in front of us. Now we're traveling normally. So, we prepare, we pack our goods, and we are going to travel into the land of Israel. Yoshua calls in the tribe of Reuven, God, and half the tribe of Manasseh, and says, remember your promise. You promised you'd help us with the war, and now's your time to keep your promise. And they do. They part from their families, and they head into the land of Israel with us. We travel towards the Jordan. When we approach the Jordan, so the waters of the Jordan are overflowing. It's the spring, remember? It's the month of Nisan, so the waters of the Jordan are filled with water. And now we are going to traverse the Jordan to enter the land of Israel. Ad Yavoram Hashem, Ad Yavoram Zukanita. When the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they had a prophetic vision that we would enter the land of Israel miraculously, that the splitting of the Jordan would be miraculous like the splitting of the sea. So now, this is all going to happen. Now when Yoshua is appointed as leader of the people, Hashem tells Yoshua, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong. Lo yamush sefer ha-Torah ze mipicha yomam v'agita bo yomam v'layla. The Sefer Torah, the Torah, the Book of Dvarim, the Torah is something you have to learn day and night, and be strong. And the people of Israel tell Joshua, we're behind you. Kol ish asher yamreh et picha, anyone that goes against what you say, anyone that doesn't listen to you is going to get the death penalty. Rak chazak ve'ematz, provided that you're strong. In what? Provided that you're strong in adhering to the Torah. Meaning, here we learn the laws of a king. Yoshua was our king after Moshe. And the people told him, if anyone rebels against what you say, we'll kill him. Provided that you, Yoshua, go in line with the Torah. So here they taught us, when do you have to listen to a king? When he goes in line with the Torah. Centuries later, when King Saul orders his men to murder the Kohanim, the priests, so his men say no. And Saul says, what do you mean, I'm the king? And they say, yes, but what did they tell Joshua? What did they tell Yoshua? We will listen to you, and anyone who rebels against you gets the death penalty, provided that you go in line with the Torah. And this is not in line with the Torah. So, we get ready, we pack our bags, we start traveling, and we head towards the land of Israel. We reach the Jordan. The Jordan is filled with water. Now, the people are instructed that on this day, the Kohanim will carry the Aron. Ordinarily, the Ark led the way. And who carried the Ark? The Levites. Ordinarily, the Ark was in the middle of the camp. Remember, right? The whole camp was around the Ark. And now the Kohanim lead the way with the Ark, and the Kohanim enter the Jordan. When the Kohanim's feet enter the Jordan splits, and it splits in a miraculous way. The waters keep flowing down, and there's like an invisible wall that stops the waters at a distance, and they don't keep coming, but rather they start piling up, huge tsunami piling up. The waters start piling up against this invisible wall. Now, ordinarily, you'd think they'd spill over on all the sides. You'd have a huge flood. No, the water starts towering up. And so the people enter the Jordan, and to their left, all the waters have flown down. To their right, they see a huge tower of water piling up. Because the Jordan keeps flowing, but instead of flowing down, it just flows upward.
No,
the other half keeps flowing.
From where?
Well,
it's going to just float away.
Okay. So now they have dry land. They enter, so the Kohanim's feet entered the Jordan. They didn't cross the Jordan, they just entered the Jordan. The Jordan splits. All of Israel enters the Jordan.
Oh, wow.
And then God tells them, stop. Everyone stops in the middle of the Jordan. They look to their right, and they see a huge pile of water getting bigger and bigger by the second, towering to their right. And now Yoshua has a speech. Now we have to talk. You know, just like when we began as a people, God lifted the mountain of Sinai over our heads and said, now we have to talk. So now before we enter the land of Israel again, God renews the covenant and says, you have responsibility when you enter this land of Israel. You have a responsibility to me, to the Torah, to conquer the land. You have a responsibility. And so they take 12 stones and they put them in the Jordan. And they take another 12 stones corresponding to the tribes that they will take with them out of the Jordan. And those stones will be there to commemorate the great miracle that happened as we entered the land of Israel. So after the speech and the nation agrees, the nation crosses. And the Kohanim take 3 steps back. And the waters come flowing calmly down as though nothing happened. So you have the Kohanim outside Israel with the Aron. And the people of Israel inside Israel. What happens? The Aron levitates and carries the Kohanim across and lands inside Israel. And this is a concept that we see repeatedly. Ha'aron nose et noseav. It looks like the Kohanim are carrying the Aron on their shoulders. No, the Aron is really carrying them. All the years, well, it's a Gemara. But the verse says that the Kohanim took a few steps back out of the water. And then the verse never bothers to explain how they get in. The verse just says they stepped a few steps into the Jordan split, and then they took a few steps out, and the Jordan went flowing again. So how did they ever get over? The verse doesn't tell us that. So that's a tradition we have, that's what happened. So this is not only an interesting medrash, it's also a concept. Very often we think we're carrying things. There's a saying that says, more than the Jews kept the Shabbos kept the Jews. All the years we were in exile, we thought, we're upholding the Shabbos. No, the Shabbos is upholding us. So that's the idea, you think you're carrying the Torah is really carrying the person. So they enter the land of Israel and they travel up to Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, and they have the famous procession with the blessings and the curses, and they accept it. And Yoshua writes the Torah in 70 languages, so all the nations can see, what do we live by? He writes a summary of the Torah in 70 languages, of all 613 mitzvos. And we come and we camp by Gilgal. Now the Pesach is rapidly approaching, and in order to celebrate Pesach, everyone has to be circumcised. So now we are going to have mass circumcision. And everyone gets circumcised, because all the years we were in the desert, the people didn't circumcise. There weren't enough winds, and they thought it was dangerous. Only the Levites circumcised in the desert. And when we circumcised, we had a tradition that once we enter the land of Israel, there is another part to the circumcision that we must do. Meaning, ordinarily when you do circumcision, so what you remove is the foreskin. Now under the foreskin, there is a membrane that's there over the gland, that also gets cut off. So that idea that you cut off the membrane as well, that you do a split in the membrane and you peel it back, that's something which was not done until we entered the land of Israel. We had a tradition that we would only start it now. And so now they circumcised everyone. Now, yes?
I have a quick question. So they didn't circumcise themselves in the desert. They thought it was too dangerous.
Correct.
But on the other hand, they trusted in God to do everything else for them. Why couldn't they use that same logic here?
So it was a borderline case, meaning some things are a danger, and you say you can't do that, that's a danger. Some things are safe, and you say you have to do it, it's safe. And some things are in between, where it's up to a person. Is a person going to say, I'm dedicated to Hashem and I'm doing it and I'm not worried about the danger? Or is a person going to say, I can say I'm worried and then I wouldn't have to do it, so then I'm going to say I'm worried and I won't do it. Most of Israel said, I'm worried, I'm not doing it. The Levites said, we're dedicated to Hashem, we're doing it. So it was a merit to them and it wasn't a sin for the others. The others were within their rights not doing it. Meaning that there are sometimes situations like that where it's in between. It's risky enough that you're legitimate in saying I'm not doing it. And it's still not that risky that you're crazy if you do it. It's a pious thing for those who do. So that's what it was like to circumcise in the desert.
What was the danger?
The danger was that the air was stagnant. The air wasn't moving. You have clouds all around you and stagnant air. So the Talmud says they knew that if you don't have certain winds, if the air remains stagnant, so then the circumcision is more in danger, the wound. And so that's why they didn't circumcise. Yes?
My understanding is that circumcision is seen as the completion or the perfection of the newborn.
Italech lefanai ve'yei tamim. God says to Avraham Avinu. Yes.
Okay. So why, and this may be a Thursday night question, why is there not even equivocal, why are females exempt? Why is there not some way of doing something to mark them physically?
Maybe they're perfect without it.
That's what I'm...
Two opinions in the Gemara. Machlokas Shulchan Aruch Rama and Halacha. Where does this have halachic relevance? Benching. Do we say ve'al b'risicha shechasamto b'vsareinu? Are women supposed to say that? So, do we have a Shulchan Aruch here? We used to. Okay. There's a Rama that I've yet to find anyone who adheres to. The Rama says in benching that women should not say al berisicha shechasam tobiv sareinu. I've yet to see a woman who doesn't. I even called up my grandmother when she was alive. She was a Yeki from the old school. She learned Rav Hirsch's school. So I asked her, do you say it? She said, sure. Okay, so either Rama says not to. Okay, good question. I don't know. Maybe we go like the Shulchan Aruch.
Which says
it doesn't say they shouldn't, so... And I guess they should. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. Is it that they're considered that they have it already, or it's just not relevant to them?
Okay, so that they already have it in some
yeah.
way.
Yeah. They don't need that. Is it that they don't need it, or they're missing it? Yeah. Okay. So, when we left Egypt, the Egyptian stargazers looked in the sky, and they saw the constellation of Ra'ah, evil, that's standing in our way. They said, the way you're traveling, there's bloodshed en route. And Hashem said, well, they're going anyways. And the Egyptians were right. There was supposed to be that bloodshed by the sin of the golden calf. But then Moshe pleaded on our behalf, and Hashem said, okay, we will transfer the sign, and that bloodshed will be fulfilled with the shedding of the blood of the circumcision. So even though the stars predict things, they don't predict them with accuracy. So that's what happened, and that's what Hashem said. Now you no longer have the shame of the Egyptians on you. The Egyptians kept saying, we see that those stars are over the Jews traveling the desert. We're still waiting to see where they're going to fall. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu claimed, that the sin of the golden calf. Lama yomehu Mitzrayim lemo. Why should the Egyptians say the following? He took them under the constellation of Ra'ah, of evil, to eventually annihilate them. And Hashem said, fine, you're right. And so that sign was transferred, and now it was fulfilled. So we have this mass circumcision, which shows a tremendous dedication to Hashem. Think about it. They just entered the land of Israel. When was the last time there was a mass circumcision in the land of Israel? City of Shechem. And when you had the city of Shechem having a mass circumcision, two little kids could take down the whole city. So now they're coming against over 30 kings. Almost 40 kings are standing opposite them, right? And they're all circumcised. Who's going to fight for them? The Levites. Who's going to fight for them? The women. And this shows a great dedication to Hashem. They were all circumcised when they entered, and then they could bring the Paschal offering. And the next morning after the Paschal offering, they could already eat the new crops. Remember, after we bring the Omer sacrifice. So they camp over there in the first camping called Gilgal. And they have their mass circumcision and their Paschal offering there. Now, if we want to trace where was their center of worship, so it begins with the Midbar, goes on to the Gilgal, and then Shiloh, and then Nov, and then Givon, and then the temple. This is going to be the order of where the, call it the temple, call it the Mishkan, where the Mishkan is going to be situated. How do I remember? There's an acronym, Magshangai. Magshangai. Midbar, Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, Yerushalayim. Magshangai.
Mnemonic helps to remember things. Acronym stands for...
Is it Rosh HaTevot?
Ken.
Rosh HaTevot.
Yeah. If it's helping to remember something, then it's mnemonic. If it's like FBI, Federal Bureau of Information, I'm trying to remember anything. So no. Even that's not an acronym, that's an initialism. An acronym has to be said as a word.
Okay.
There's an acronym is initialism. Initialism is like FBI, and acronym is like... Like say it like a word, like Rashi.
Okay. Yeah. We're getting edumacated here. This is very good. Now we'll all know.
We're grown fanatic.
Okay. So we're going to go and conquer Jericho. We are going to go and conquer Jericho and we are healing and we will be healed. We'll pick up here, Bizlat Shem, next week.